Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Allergy season is here, and that means one thing. You need the Thunderstorm. Save on their lowest price with code word Howie at EdenPure.com.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
We're seeing the radicalization of the Republican Party in real time. My hope is that the sensible, logical wing of the Republican Party will gain power. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. And so we're seeing a more extreme, more dangerous Republican Party right now.
You don't say. Goodness gracious, whatever shall we do?
I think it's pretty, unless something very odd happens, I would say that it is pretty much over, but...
You should be thanking me for liberating you from your world of loneliness and isolation.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
I don't want lunch. I want breakfast.
I eat no for breakfast.
We stop serving breakfast at 11:30.
Have you ever heard the expression, the customer is always right?
I've heard all of those things many times over the course of my career, but I didn't listen.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Welcome to the Howie Carr Show. It is Memorial Day 2021, and we are here for the full show today. And if you'd like to join us, the number as always is 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. And we should start by talking about Memorial Day. This used to be a very, very big holiday in the United States, especially in the Northeast, I think. When I was a kid, it was May 30th. It wasn't a three-day weekend. And where I went to school, they always took us out of school, and we had to all go down to the graveyard and, listen to some prayers, et cetera. The headmaster of the school he was a very old man. He'd been born in 1879. He knew Civil War veterans, and, of course, Memorial Day was originally Decoration Day, and it was to commemorate the dead on both sides, the Union side and the Confederate side. And, in those days, and, many people still do know that who and what we honor on Memorial Day, those who gave all their tomorrows, as was said of the men who stormed the beaches of Normandy, for all of our todays. And that's from a column by Peter Collier in the Wall Street Journal 14 years ago today, and I'll read you part of that column. But it's, these are people who we remember, the people who gave their all, who gave the last measure of sacrifice for us, for our freedoms. And as Ronald Reagan famously said, liberty is never more than one generation from being extinguished. And we can certainly understand that right now with what we're enduring here in the United States, the assaults on the Republic and the Constitution. And, but the people who came before us, the hundreds of thousands, if not million, or more than a million people, who have died in our various conflicts and wars, we owe them a great debt of gratitude that we can obviously never repay them. And 844-500-4242. And I just want to read you a couple of comments about Memorial Day. This was from Ronald Reagan at Arlington National Cemetery on May 31st, 1982. I have no illusions about what little I can now add to the silent testimony of those who gave their lives willingly for their country. Words are even more feeble on this Memorial Day, for the sight before us is that of a strong and good nation that stands in silence and remembers those who are loved and who in return love their country enough to die for it. Here's a statement from President Trump We'll play some cuts from Joe Biden. The usual Joe Biden cuts, but let me read you what Donald Trump emailed out today. On this Memorial Day, we remember the fallen heroes who took their last breaths in defense of our nation, our families, our citizens, and our sacred freedoms. The depth of their devotion, the steel of their resolve, and the purity of their patriotism has no equal in human history. On distant battlefields, in far-off oceans, and high in the skies above, they faced down our enemies and gave their lives so that America would prevail. They made the supreme sacrifice so that our people can live in safety and our nation can thrive in peace. This is Donald Trump this morning. It is because of their gallantry that we can together as one people continue our pursuit of America's glorious destiny. We owe all that we are and everything we ever hope to be to these unrivaled heroes. Their memory and their legacy is immortal. Our loyalty to them and to their families is eternal and everlasting. America's warriors are the single greatest force for justice, peace, liberty, and security among all the nations ever to exist on earth. God bless our fallen soldiers, sailors, Coast Guardsmen, airmen, and Marines. We honor them today, forever, and always. 844-500-4242. That is the toll-free number of the Howie Carr Show. 781. I went to look something up on Google. The Google icon always celebrates everything with colors and pictures. Nothing but a gray Google today on Memorial Day. Are you surprised? What do they have on Christmas Day? 781. You know what they have. They have nothing about Christmas. This is Peter Collier's column in the Wall Street Journal for Memorial Day 2007. I tweeted it out earlier. It was Powerline Blog reprinted it or reposted it. Once we knew who and what to honor on Memorial Day, those who had given all their tomorrows, as was said of the men who stormed the beaches of Normandy, for our todays. In my own boyhood, figures such as Jimmy Doolittle, Audie Murphy, and John Bassalone were household names. And it was assumed that what they had done defined us as well as them, telling us what kind of nation we were. But the medal recipients alive today are virtually unknown except for a niche audience of warfare buffs. You know who John Bassalone was? I looked him up once and I'd forgotten him, and I looked him up again today. John Bassalone got the Congressional Medal of Honor for his incredible bravery on Guadalcanal in 1942. And then he came back to the States, and as often happened in those days, they put him on a nationwide tour, and he was selling war bonds with Hollywood stars and people like the big band leaders and all that kind of thing. But it was a great existence that he was leading. But he said, "I'm just a soldier. I want to go back with my platoon, my company, my regiment, whatever." And they said, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Yes, John Bassalone." And so he went back, and he was killed at Iwo Jima in 1945 after winning the Congressional Medal of Honor. It's just an amazing story. You know who Audie Murphy was? He was the guy who won he was a sharecropper son from Texas, little small guy, and he won he killed countless Germans in the European theater, obviously. And they later became a Western movie star. He wrote an autobiography later on, Only the Horses Changed, or some title like that. Talking about the heroism of the fallen heroes. Why did they do it? Said Peter Collier. Some talked of entering a zone of slow motion invulnerability where they were spectators at their own heroism. But for most, the answer was simpler and more straightforward. They couldn't let their buddies down. We impoverish ourselves by shunting these heroes and their experiences to the back pages of our national consciousness. You mean like Kamala Harris saying, have a good long weekend? Didn't even mention what Memorial Day is all about. Not even in passing. Their stories are not just boys' adventure tales writ large. They are a kind of moral instruction. They remind of something we've heard many times before, but is worth repeating on a Memorial Day when we're uncertain about what we celebrate. We're the land of the free for one reason only. We're also the home of the brave. 844-500-4242. One last thing here. This is a prayer I found on the internet today. Eternal rest grant unto them, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon them. May the souls of the faithful departed through the mercy of God rest in peace. Amen. 844-500-4242. Sitting is the new smoking. These days we are sitting working on our computers more than ever. Let me tell you about my new favorite office chair, the Backstrong chair. You know that stiff feeling you get when you sit too long while working? It's gone now. And when I get out of the chair to walk around, my body doesn't hurt. Poorly designed office chairs can lead to severe pain in your hips, back, and shoulders, but not the Backstrong chair. It guarantees you good posture. You literally cannot slouch. The Backstrong was a result of more than 5 years of prototyping and research, working with pain patients and testing to arrive at the patented sit-in-motion technology that positions the hips into natural, ideal alignment for healthy sitting. Do you sit more than 4 hours per day? Do you get up from your chair feeling tired, drained, unmotivated? Do you have back pain or lose feeling in your legs because you are sitting for extended periods of time? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you need this. It's super comfortable, perfect for your home or office, backed by hundreds of five-star reviews. 60-day money-back guarantee. Right now, save $100 plus get free shipping when you use the discount code Howie. To get yours, go to backstrong.com today. Again, get $100 off and free shipping by going to backstrong.com and using discount code Howie. I'm Howie Carr.
You might want to keep a close eye on your fried clams. Howie Carr returns after this.
Yum, yum, yum.
I can still teach you a few, kid. You're just a tin horn thug and you always will be. You haven't got the guts to be anything else.
The Howie Carr Show.
Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day.
Sergeant Barry Sadler. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Backstrong chair. Sitting is the new smoking, and you are sitting now more than ever, I dare say. Give your back a break like I did and order one today at backstrong.com. Use discount word Howie and save $100. That's backstrong.com. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Will Dr. Fauci still have a job by the end of the year?
He shouldn't, but, you know, I think they have too much invested in the scam to fire him. It would be too much of an admission that it was all a hoax. So I'm saying yes, he will.
62% think so as well.
Yeah, I know. But again, it could go it depends on how bad it gets, but I think they're going to clamp the lid down, just like they clamped the lid down for a year.
There's still a lot of shareholders out there in this scam.
Right. Yeah. Well, two of them are in contiguous. One of them's in a contiguous state, and the next one's in a contiguous state to the contiguous state who went to high school with the governor of Massachusetts, who stands number three in the death toll. I refer, of course, to Governors Cuomo and Murphy. They have a big share in this, and Governor Newsom, Governor Whitmer, there are a lot of them. Biden, all the Democrats have a share. Kathy, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, Howie. Hi. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you the story that my father came back from World War II. He was at Hickey Air Base, which was near the harbor at the time of the bombing.
Right.
And
Pearl Harbor.
Hickey Air Base,
yeah.
Yes, Pearl Harbor. And Hickey Air Base was pretty much destroyed as well. And after the attack, the guys had to get together and to this day, because we went to Pearl with him during his reunions many times before he died. And they spent days retrieving the bodies. And he recalls that he was on the top of the Arizona, and all they kept hearing was knocking and knocking and knocking.
God.
And they did not have the technology or the equipment
right
to get to them. And he said to the day he died that the knocking of those guys at the Arizona, and it still makes me so emotional when
I know.
Talk about it, because there was nothing they could do to save those guys.
Isn't there still oil supposedly leaking out of the Arizona every now and then? You know, it's...
Yes, so I think the memorial is closed now for renovations. But I was there a couple of years ago, and there's every once in a while, it's kind of cordoned off now. The Arizona, of course, the environmental people.
Right.
But you'll see a little blip of oil every once in a while, and people really believe that blip of oil are coming from the people who were entombed in the Arizona.
Right.
And many that were alive when it overturned.
Nine quarts a day. That's what it says on the internet. Nine quart after close to 80 years, almost 80 years. It's still coming out of there, Kathy.
And there was some, if I can just say one more thing.
Sure.
There was some movement to bring the Arizona up because of the environmental impact of the oil. And I know I got together with, there was a group of us whose fathers were in World War II, who really rallied against that. Not that I don't care about the environment, but that is a tomb.
Right. I agree.
And many men died while waiting for help that never came.
Thanks for the call so much, Kathy, and thanks for your father's service. I was thinking about, you know, Howie Winter, the guy from Somerville who was the head of the Winter Hill Gang, and he didn't die in World War II, obviously, but I was thinking about him today. He enlisted in the Marines when he was 14 years old. Joe Moakley, the congressman from South Boston, also deceased. He enlisted in the Merchant Marine when he was 15 years old. And those guys, you know, and I was reading a book over the weekend with All the Rain, and they were saying that if you got into the service, you know, wherever you got in, if you were 14, 15, you weren't getting out. I mean, they didn't care. You know, there was a guy who won the Medal of Honor who dropped out of the ninth grade. He's actually in Peter Collier's column. And he told his mom, he said, if you let me go in, I guess he was 14 when he went in, and they made him, he was going to be an MP or do guard duty, but he snuck aboard and got ashore at Iwo Jima. And he told his mom, he said, if you let me go into the service, I'll go back to school. So he came back as a ninth grader after World War II with the Medal of Honor. I mean, it's just this kind of heroism is just amazing. It's the selflessness of these heroes and what they did. Samantha, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Samantha.
Hey, Howie. Thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to take a moment out of my day to remember my dad. I didn't learn about his service until he was on his deathbed in the fall of 1987. He was born in New York City in 1929. He was raised in Bogota, Colombia. He returned to the United States in 1945 at the age of 16, and he didn't speak any English, and he was an American citizen. He served in the Air Force, and he served in the Marines each 2 years, and that's when I guess you could serve in the Marines for 2 years, because I think it's a mandatory four, and has been for quite a while. And his name in Bogota was Jaime Santos Fernandez. And in America, it was James Santos. So I just wanted to remember him today, and I appreciate the forum in which to do so.
Thank you. Thank you, Samantha. Thanks for calling. 844-500-4242. We'll take some more calls when we come back on this. And we'll talk about the weekend, too, the first free weekend in 15 months later on. I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Let me tell you a little, read you a little bit about this 14-year-old, not Howie Winter, but another guy, Jack Lucas. This is, again, from Peter Collier's column in the Wall Street Journal 14 years ago today, which we tweeted out. Big for his age at 14, Jack Lucas begged his mother to help him enlist after Pearl Harbor. She collaborated in lying about his age in return for his promise to someday finish school. After training at Parris Island, he was sent to Honolulu. When his unit boarded a troop ship for Iwo Jima, Mr. Lucas was ordered to remain behind for guard duty. He stowed away to be with his friends and discovered 2 days out to sea, convinced his commanding officer to put him in a combat unit rather than the brig. He had just turned 17 when he hit the beach, and a day later he was fighting in a Japanese trench when he saw two grenades land near his comrades. He threw himself onto the grenades and absorbed the explosion. Later, a medic, assuming he was dead, was about to take his dog tag when he saw Mr. Lucas's finger twitch. After months of treatment and recovery, he returned to school as it promised his mother, a ninth grader wearing a Medal of Honor around his neck. 844-500-4242-917. There's another thing about many of these guys who served, and that's their humility, especially guys from World War II, like my dad who served in the Navy. I remember when we were in Washington, D.C., trying to kill some time, I suggested we drive by the World War II Memorial. He asked why. I said, well, it's a monument to guys like you who were heroes for serving. He thought I was out of my mind. And 860 says, the biggest difference between these 14-year-olds who went into the war is that they had more common sense and work ethic than the average 28-year-old today. Rose, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Rose.
Hello, Howie. Thanks for taking my call. As you can tell, I'm not from America. I'm from Australia, and I just wanted to take a moment to talk about Papua New Guinea. Australia had entered... Australia had entered Papua New Guinea to fight the Japanese, and they were running low on everything. They were done. They were getting picked off. They had just about run out of steam, and the Americans arrived with food and soldiers and everything they needed to fight back. My grandfather was one of those people, and he was patrolling with his crew, and he was the lead at that point and went out into a clearing to see if it was safe. And a Japanese sniper took out his thigh, took out the whole muscle at the back of his thigh and dropped him. Now, this man laid on the ground bleeding, and knowing that you never leave one of your own behind, the soldiers all sort of stand out and tried to rescue him. This poor man laid on the ground while snipers took out his comrades and they landed dead on top of him. To the day he died, he never once mentioned it. It was only after he passed away that one of his friends actually told us the story and we knew what a hero he was.
Hmm. Papua New Guinea, that was where JFK was on PT-109, I believe, wasn't it?
Oh, well, there you go. I don't know if my grandpa met him.
No, I don't think he did. Jack was in that, Jack was out there for a few missions, and then he got rammed by the destroyer, and he was on the island. I mean, he didn't do a good job as the skipper of the boat, I don't think. Pretty much everybody agrees on that, but he was a hero once the boat went down, and he made sure that everybody got saved and rescued. So that was a terrible, the Pacific was it was a terrible theater of war, just like, well, they all were. It was terrible. Thanks for the call, Rose. We appreciate it. Scott, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi, Howie. Long time. I've been on with you before. I wanted to tell a quick story about my grandfather that was in World War II. And it was something, as a couple women had said before, they didn't know because they didn't speak about their service. And at his eulogy in 1999, a man stood up and told a story. And he said, when my grandfather was a paratrooper, who obviously was voluntary, he landed in a field of cows, and he pulled out his knife, He was going to kill the cows because the cows were mooing, making all kinds of noise. Obviously, he didn't want to be captured or killed. And he said to God, he said, would you just please stop the cows? I don't want to kill them. And like magic, they stopped.
That's a great story.
And then in, and then in 1999, on the very night that he asked God to spare his life and not to get killed by the Germans, by the cows, God took him back.
Wow.
It was that many years later, on the same night, in the middle of the morning. I just always thought that that story has never left me.
Can you imagine being a paratrooper like the ones who parachuted into occupied France right before D-Day began? I mean, how many of those people survived? I mean, most of them, a lot of them just landed in trees or on church steeples and were just shot down by the Germans. I mean, that was it was a suicide mission being in the paratroopers. Or guys who took out all the Japanese carriers at Midway. I mean, that was a suicide mission, and they knew it was a suicide mission, and they didn't care. They just went in. Speaking of, people being rescued, like Rose was talking about her grandfather, here's another story from Peter Collier's column. Desmond Doss was a conscientious objector who entered the Army in 1942 and became a medic. Because of his religious convictions and refusal to carry a weapon, the men in his unit intimidated and threatened him, trying to get him to transfer out. He refused, and they grudgingly accepted him. In 1945, he was with them in Okinawa when they got cut to pieces assaulting a Japanese stronghold. Everyone but Mr. Doss retreated from the rocky plateau where dozens of wounded remained. Under fire, he treated them and began moving them one by one to a steep escarpment where he roped them down to safety. Each time he succeeded, he prayed, "Dear God, please let me get out just one more man." By the end of the day, he had single-handedly saved 75 GIs. Bruce, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hey, Howie, where are those guys today? Like my dad, he was a young guy from MEFA, and he ended up at Pearl Harbor after the bombing and stuff, and besides being a pilot, he had great diving skills, and he volunteered to dive amongst the wrecks, swimming with tiger sharks, giant octopus, and whatever, just to get the tags. And if there was no tags, he would bring the skull in a little bag. And they didn't have buoyancy compensators. They didn't have all the stuff they had today. But he volunteered to do that, and everybody asked him later on in life, why would you ever do that? And he said, because if I was down there, I would expect someone to come and get me. And that was how he was, Howie. And I miss him. And God bless America. And God bless all the guys that gave their lives and almost lost their lives. I'm sure he could have done it there, Howie. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Bruce. And thanks for your story, and thanks for your father's service. You should read some of the books about the day after Pearl Harbor, when just like everybody was going down to enlist. I mean, Liz Smith, the late gossip columnist for the New York tabloids, she was in school in Texas, and she said that December 8th, every male in her college in Texas went down to enlist. And there's great in one of James Ellroy's books. He wrote a lot of great books about Los Angeles in the 40s, 50s, 60s. He talks about the selective service offices, draft boards, just being overwhelmed the next day with people who wanted to join up and enlist. And nobody knew how long it was going to go on. And hundreds of thousands of Americans were killed. It wasn't as many casualties as the Civil War, and there was a lot larger population, obviously, but the casualty lists were huge. I was reading one today, for instance, the Battle of the Bulge. I think there were 25,000 Americans killed in the Battle of the Bulge when the Germans counterattacked in late 1944, 1945. 844-500-4242. Nancy, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, Howie. It's a great show.
Thanks.
Both my parents were in the Pacific. My mother was a Navy nurse. My father was a Silver Star recipient. He was actually Chesty Puller's assistant for a while. And it wasn't until he passed away at the age of 100 a year ago. And it wasn't until then that I realized he told a little anecdote story about how he was wounded and on the ship, the hospital ship, taking him back. He was there with Jack Kennedy.
Really?
Yeah, and he was from, my father grew up in Queens, and my grandfather was a big Democrat. And when Kennedy was running, they were at a reception, and my grandfather introduced him to Jack, and he said, "Oh yeah, Bob, and his last name. I remember you." But he never really talked about the war, and he saw so much in Guadalcanal. He said it was just horrendous.
Oh, I know. All those islands. They were all just slaughterhouses. You know, it's interesting about Jack Kennedy. We were talking about New Guinea earlier with the Australian woman, and when November 1963, Jack Kennedy had invited some of the people who helped him, some of the natives. They were getting ready to come to Washington D.C. to have a big ceremony at the White House and meet Jack Kennedy, who was like a 140-pound ensign when they met him. And then they got the word at the airport, I guess it was, or very close to getting to the airport, that he had been assassinated, and that was the end of their trip to Washington D.C. Thanks for the call, Nancy. Let's see, Powell, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Powell.
Hey, how you doing, Howie?
Good.
All right, quick story for you. A lot of times people talk about, like, the graves in America, but I want to talk about a soldier who died in Poland, American soldier who died in Poland. You know, in 1944, we was fighting in a Warsaw Uprising, and the army stopped on the river, and they waited for us to die. The communists waited for us to die.
Right. For people who aren't familiar with it, there was an uprising in the ghetto, because the Jewish ghetto was being wiped out. So they said, what the hell? Why are we waiting around? And they rose up. And, the Red Army was closing in on Warsaw. They were pushing the Germans back in west. And the Stalin just said, hold off and let the Germans kill all the Jews, right?
Well, there was two uprisings. There was a ghetto uprising, and then there was a Warsaw uprising. Ghetto uprising was 43. The Warsaw uprising was 44.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically what happened was the Stalin stopped because he saw the Polish people raise up in Warsaw, and he waited for them to die because he didn't want to free Poland.
Right.
But my point today is that 1,130 American flyers came in 1944 to help the Poles, to drop the supplies.
Oh, I see. To drop supplies
America,
in there. Yeah.
And he wouldn't let, Stalin wouldn't let them land, right?
Yeah.
So basically a lot of these guys would crash. And I want to talk about one American pilot in a village of Starovieshi. He crashed because Stalin wouldn't give him the place to land.
Right.
And the Germans surrounded the plane, and they waited for him to burn.
Wow. That's just, the Russians also, when they got Poland in a pincer right at the start of the war, the Germans hit from the west, and the Russians, the Soviets from the east, and the Russians executed thousands of members of the officer corps of the Polish army. Thanks for the call, Powell. Allergy season is here, and that means one thing. You need the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Warmer temps are creeping up, and you are going to want to open those doors and windows. Pollen is going to come in, and when it does, you are going to need the Thunderstorm Air Purifier. One user wrote, "The Thunderstorm does what it claims. It definitely is effective on my husband's allergies, sneezing, runny nose, and coughing. The Thunderstorm is a small device you can hold in your hand and plug into your electrical outlet or into your car by USB cable to purify the air. And the great part of it is it's well under $100. The Thunderstorm air purifier works like a real thunderstorm. It quietly sends out super oxygen and ions to kill odors in your room and purify the air. Many use it to remove pet smells. For pollen, pet, kitchen, musty basements, tobacco, or any unwanted odors, you need the Thunderstorm. Right now, you can get the Thunderstorm at the lowest price available. Just use code word Howie, and you will save an additional $10 off the sales price and free shipping. Go to EdenPure.com, click on the radio banner, and put code word Howie at checkout. That's EdenPure.com, radio banner, and code word Howie. With the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, your problem rooms will no longer be a problem. I'm Howie Carr.
The Howie Carr Show. Got hate mail?
You bloated idiot! You stupid fat head!
Send it to Grace at HowieCarshow.com.
We're thankful for those, thankful for the things we've done. We can rest in peace, cause we are the chosen ones. We made it to Arlington.
Jose Lopez, a diminutive Mexican-American from the barrio in San Antonio, was in the Ardennes Forest when the Germans began the counteroffensive that became the Battle of the Bulge. As 10 enemy soldiers approached his position, he grabbed a machine gun and opened fire, killing them all. He killed 24 more who rushed him. Knocked down by the concussion of German shells, he picked himself up, packed his weapon on his back, and ran toward a group of Americans about to be surrounded. He began firing and didn't stop until all his ammunition and all that he could scrounge from other guns was gone. By then, he had killed over 100 of the enemy and bought his comrades time to establish a defensive line. Yet their stories are not only about killing. This, again, Peter Collier's column many years, 14 years ago in the Wall Street Journal. Several Medal of Honor recipients told me that the first thing they did after the battle was to find a church or some other secluded spot where they could pray, not only for those comrades they'd lost, but also for the enemy that they had killed. Richard, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, quick story. I was in the Boy Scouts, mid-70s. It was the police explorers, and we had a meet and greet. The fathers would meet other fathers and the sons. Well, one of my friends, Brian's dad, found out that he flew over Germany just after D-Day, and the other father came over and said, I overheard you saying something about flying over Germany in D-Day. He was a Luftwaffe pilot. They bumped into each other, and they realized they were shooting at each other, perhaps, that day. They identified a couple large explosions and some ground movement. And, well, both fathers are long gone now. But it was such a twist of irony. Yeah. Here they are, you know, sitting down with each other, having a beer and a couple burgers.
I read a story recently about a guy. He was a Medal of Honor winner, and I guess he had been like always been an enlisted man. And I guess he, you know, in the Army Air Corps, and then he moved into the Air Force, and then he retired, and he still wanted to make some extra money, so he became a janitor at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado. And nobody, he never mentioned that. He just would, you know, he would just do his housekeeping duties every day. And finally, somehow one of the cadets figured it out or put two and two together, whatever. And that was the only way they ever found out that this janitor was a Medal of Honor recipient winner. It was an amazing, I wish I could remember his name. Thanks for the call, Richard. Ted, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Ted. Quickly, Ted.
Hey, Howie.
Hi.
I had six uncles that served in the war, and like that gentleman you mentioned, they never talked about it. Growing up, we'd go to my grandmother's house every Sunday. They never mentioned it. After they died, my brothers and I found out who served and who was at Normandy, who was in the Battle of the Bulge, who saw the death camps. And we even had the quietest uncle of them all, among his personal effects, we found he was a Polish expatriate. He found the Cross of Monte Cassino among his person.
Wow. Thanks for the call, Ted. It's Memorial Day 2021. Think about those who give their full measure for our freedom and liberty. I'm Howie Carr.